As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
So the last 16 is underway with the USA and Australia heading home. Messi is through to the last 8 with Kylian Mbappe also eyeing a place in the quarterfinals. England's knockout campaign gets underway against African champions Senegal at the Al Bayt Stadium. It's day 15 in Qatar. I'm Adam Leventhal and this is the Athletic Football Podcast. So we loved it so much. Yesterday, we are back at the Souq Waqif to have this as our location for today's podcast episode. And as it was yesterday, the atmosphere is just gradually building around us. We've had rather sort of handsome, impressive men on horses walking past. Clip-clop, clip-clop they went. And I've also had a cat in my bag, which has been interesting as we've set up for this podcast. Ollie Kay and Jack Pitbrook are alongside me. It's a nice sort of start to the day. There's some, just seeing some England fans just sort of walking past as we speak, just getting ready for a big day ahead.
Yeah, it's the first time I've been in the souk at this time of day. It's normally kind of quite wild and lively in the afternoons and evenings when I've been before. The morning, it feels quite nice and chilled out, and the sort of atmosphere gently, gradually building. But it's a nice setup. Although I keep having to remind myself that it's a reproduction souk. It was built in 2006, I think, and it was so this is sort of portrayed as the old part of town, but it's not. Well, I suppose it is relative to most of the rest of it.
Yeah, it is faux, but it is still quite a sight. Here. I suppose it's interesting as well, on the day of an England game, I suppose maybe at other tournaments you'd have England fans already in bars on it with pints in front of them, which is, it's lovely to see that they're not already.
Yeah, it's that has been one of the big differences about this World Cup compared to other tournaments, has been the change in behaviour and atmosphere necessitated by the lack of alcohol. Like, it's not that you...
I mean, it's not just the journalists.
Yeah. It's not that you can't drink here, you can. But having, you know, a lot of England fans take over a square and drink pints of beer all day, which of course has, you know, been a feature of all the last few tournaments, that just isn't a factor here at all. I have not seen, or I mean, there might be an instance that I've missed, but I haven't seen or heard of any incidents with England fans regarding, you know, alcohol, antisocial behaviour, all those like associated factors that you usually get.
We're just getting a finger pointing in the air from Abby Patterson, who's producing the show, just saying, well, maybe I've seen a few. But no, I think you're absolutely right that the atmosphere on the whole has been a lot calmer. And you, even if you are at a hotel and you're in the bar, or you're at a bar in town or whatever, there is that period of time where you just chill out, get into the game. You're not drinking at the ground and you can go and enjoy the game to a certain degree. It's not ramping up and up and up and up. We've digressed slightly onto alcohol. Let's focus on the action. We'll have much more from Jack and Ollie to come, but let's get some reaction now to that first day of knockout action with the United States. Unfortunately for them, one of the sides knocked out of the tournament. Abby caught up with our US men's national team writer Sam Stayskal in the mix zone after the defeat.
Sam, it was a tough night, a tough watch. Sum up your emotions coming out of this loss.
Yeah, I feel like the U.S. left something on the table because of how poorly they performed again in this game. This was by far, for me, their worst game of the entire tournament. It felt like they didn't switch off once defensively from a mental standpoint during the group stage, not one time. They gave up some chances, conceded a goal on a penalty, on a mistake, but everything was engaged and everything was fought for. And tonight, they fell asleep three different times and they gave up three different goals.
And do you think that's just that was the difference? It was just those defensive errors, or do you think it comes down to a bit of emotion, tiredness?
I think a little bit of both. Ooh, the lights have gone out on us here in the mixed zone.
Podcasting in the dark.
I think a little bit of fatigue went into the switching off. You know, you saw Tyler Adams on the first goal fail to track Memphis Depay. It was a long run forward, and it was a wonderful team goal by the Netherlands. But Tyler Adams doesn't fail to track runners. Like, that's not what he does. And you saw that happen tonight, and I think, given how they played in the group stage, the intensity and the emotion and the style in which they played, which is so much high-intensity running, especially from the midfielders, it's natural that they would be a little bit tired in their fourth game in quick succession. I think we saw that. And then the other part of it is the Netherlands were ruthless when the U.S. fell asleep. The Netherlands fell asleep on a couple of occasions, too. Once very early in the game, Christian Pulisic had a one-on-one with the goalkeeper that he hit right at him. And then once later in the match, when Haji Wright had a one-on-one off of a terrible turnover, and he took a bad touch and cut off his own angle. So the U.S. was not ruthless in the Netherlands box. Netherlands was ruthless in the U.S. box.
And we're back in the light again. What are the positives that the team can take?
I think in the group stage, they really met the moment. You know, there are a lot of questions that I had entering the tournament about, all right, this team is talented, but are they really going to step up when it's time and when it's against high-level opponents? And I think they did in the group stage. I thought they performed pretty well in all three games. I thought they should have beaten Wales. They, of course, didn't, but they certainly outplayed them. I thought they outplayed England over the duration of the match. And then Iran, they were dominant in the first half, and Iran threw the kitchen sink, and the U.S. got a little defensive, but they held on. And that was a really dominant, I think, mental, emotional performance in that second half. And then, you know, tonight they fell short. And I think a little bit of that was fatigue. A little bit of it was lack of ability, lack of talent, especially up top. But I think overall they can be pretty pleased with how they performed at the tournament, even though the end is certainly going to feel bitter. And it's going to feel that way for a long time.
For you, what needs to happen in the next 4 years for the USMNT to really prove themselves as being competitors at the later stages of knockout tournament?
Yeah, so I think the young guys on the team who are talented in carrying things forward need to continue to improve, first and foremost. Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, Brendan Aaronson, Gio Reyna, who we did not see much of this tournament, Yunus Musa, who I think could be an absolute star on the world level before too long. If they continue on their trajectories, I think the U.S. will be in a decent position. I think that, but the main thing for me, they need to find maybe some answers at center back. A couple of aging guys in there now. They have some younger guys in the pool that would have been at this tournament had they not been hurt, Miles Robinson and Chris Richards. Can they develop into better players? And then striker. We saw that tonight. They don't have one. And if you don't have one of those, you can do well in a tournament, but it's going to cost you at some point. We saw it cost him tonight, and, you know, we'll see. I'm not sure there's one in the pipeline in the immediate future, honestly.
We'll go to 20 to 30 instead then.
Yeah, exactly.
No, Sam, thank you so much for speaking to us, and good luck on your journey home. But, of course, we've got to talk about the Netherlands. They are the team that are through to the quarterfinals. Though not on the score sheet, their top scorer is still Cody Gakpo, and he has been speaking with The Athletic's David Ornstein.
There wasn't huge expectation on this Dutch team coming into the tournament. So does this give you belief that you could cause something of a surprise and go much further?
Yeah, we believed in ourselves from the start, and we come here with a goal and just try to become world champion, and we believe in that, and we're gonna fight and improve every day. And yeah,
you've had a fantastic tournament yourself, another good performance tonight. The world is talking about your future. Do you expect to make a move in January?
To be honest, I'm not thinking about that now. I'm just really focused on the tournament and try to keep performing well, keep helping the team, and hopefully when we become world champion, we're going to think about other things.
Is it hard to concentrate with that speculation going on all around you?
No, not really, because, I just, what I said, try to keep focused, and also the other players don't really speak about that kind of things and really help me also in the situation.
Will that decision on your future be taken after the tournament, nothing during the...
Yes, after.
Well, that was Cody Gakpo, one of the wanted men in the Dutch camp, speaking to David Ornstein after the game. There's much more from David on The Athletic at the moment, on the transfer news, as you would expect, including the star of the show for the Netherlands against the United States, Denzel Dumfries, on interest from Chelsea. So you can go and check that out. Argentina, they have made it through with Lionel Messi scoring on his 1,000th game to set up a quarterfinal showdown now with the Dutch. And James Horncastle was there as Messi made more history.
What a privilege that was to attend. A round of 16 game between Argentina and Australia. You know, it may not be what Argentina-Brazil is, but to see Lionel Messi at full time, take a break to just savour the moment, and smile, join his teammates bouncing up and down, singing, join the fans in concert as well, was great because, yeah, the last fortnight has not been easy for him, hasn't been easy for Argentina. Going back to the shock, the upset against Saudi Arabia, all the pressure that brought on him and this team, how tense they played against Mexico, you saw that in the celebration for Messi's opening goal. After all that, to see him enjoying himself in what will be his last World Cup was, it really stirred the soul. You know, Argentina, in some respects, got a little bit lucky tonight. I think on the balance of play, they deserved to go through. But Australia came back. They gave them a scare.
Still Baez, what a wonderful run! Oh, Baez!
Going for Lisandro Martinez to get in a huge block. You know, on the whole, there is this excitement amongst the Argentina players, which I think has been discernible really since the Poland game, before kickoff of that game, because yeah, that was when they realised that the draw was opening up for them. That this Argentina team that, you know, on the eve of the tournament thought they were probably going to get Denmark in the round of 16, and then after losing to Saudi Arabia thought they were going to get France, they got Australia instead, and they played as if they were confident of going through. They are through, and the quest for their tercera, the third World Cup title in Argentina's history, it goes on.
Meanwhile, Argentina have made it through with Lionel Messi scoring on his 1,000th game to set up that quarterfinal showdown with the Dutch. It's a mouth-watering proposition. It's got history, that fixture. First, your thoughts on Messi being front and centre. It's no surprise, is it? And he was impressive enough, even though the Australians did make it sort of maybe an unexpected battle at the end.
Yeah, it ended up being quite tough for Argentina to get over the line. Australia produced a fairly commendable fight back in the closing stages with that deflected goal and the chance very, very late on. But it was, yeah, it felt like it was all about Messi. I mean, every Argentina game seems like it's all about Messi. I think even perhaps more than previous World Cups, all eyes are on him. And I don't think the supporting cast is necessarily as glamorous as it has been in the past. But he's playing brilliantly. Is he producing the performance level at his very, very, very peak? Maybe not. But, I mean, it's still best in the world standard. And at the age of, 35, his 1,000th game, his 789th goal. And what I was just left thinking last night was, you know, 789 goals. That the quality of that particular goal would probably be in most players' top 10 goals in their career.
Yeah.
I mean, considering the moment as well as the quality of the goal, I doubt that even makes Messi's top 100. It might not even make his top 200 in terms of the technique. He's just an absolute genius with a football, and he's. I don't want to make it an argument about whether he or another is the best of his generation, but I just look at him and just think he's completely on another level and always has been.
Jack, when you watch him live, and especially in this tournament, I think it's been highlighted by pundits and analysts, etc., and I noticed it myself. It's the way that he conserves his energy, that walk around. And I know that's been common for a while. It's fascinating watching him, and he can just, in an ephemeral moment, just burst into life. And it's the precision, isn't it? He doesn't waste his time on inconsequential things.
The precision is amazing. Like, if you look at I thought his goal against Mexico was probably the best goal of the tournament so far, just because he was so far out. He had such a tiny space to put it in, into the bottom corner beyond Ochoa. And he did it perfectly. And yesterday was obviously, you know, that was from closer range, but it was still a very, very difficult goal to score. Like, he was aiming for a very specific corner of the goal. He was surrounded by Australian defenders. He didn't have that much space or time to pick his spot and hit it. And yet he still manages to find exactly the right place. You know, it was a brilliant piece of technique. Like Ollie said, if it was any other player, it would be kind of miraculous. And yet for his Messi, it's just sort of routine.
I just want to say, David Ornstein and I were watching the game last night in our hotel, had Arabic commentary going on. Now, I don't speak any Arabic. However, I can translate the commentary for when Messi has got the ball in the final third. It is literally Messi, 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 Messi. It's so much expectation that what is about to happen is going to be some moment of genius. And quite often, as it was, it didn't quite happen, but it was fun.
But that's a really good point. And in terms of the expectation level of the Argentine fans, obviously that's outside the fan base. That is just commentators being, you know, entranced by his spectacle. But when you're at games with those Argentine fans, the expectation, is that potentially going to become stifling in any way? Or is it the great motivation that might see them over the line and see Messi get his World Cup?
I worry a bit that they are on such an emotional roller coaster. You know, they were so bad against Saudi Arabia, and since then every game has been a big emotional event with huge celebrations at the end. And I just wonder if it's going to consume so much energy that eventually they'll find themselves exhausted and liable to get picked off. You know, this has happened to them in previous tournaments.
Are you wishing that, Jack?
No, not at all. I'd love them to win it. I would love Argentina to win it. But I think, I mean, it's not exactly the same, but I just wonder if it could be a little bit like Brazil in 2014. Obviously, they were hosting that tournament, but they were on such an emotional journey that eventually their kind of heads went and they got destroyed by Germany in the semi-finals. So, let's wait and see how they do against the Dutch. But I've got a sneaking suspicion Holland might be able to do them.
And we're actually sat in an Argentine cafe here in the souk, which I'm sure ahead of their next game against the Dutch will be a location for the Argentine fans. Some Poland fans have just sat down around us ahead of their game against France today.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Yeah, look, we scored the most goals in in the tournament so far in the group stage. Got a really good defensive record, obviously, in the last couple of games, especially with clean sheets. So, yeah, I feel like we're in a good place. I've said before, the group stage is just about getting through. We had a good one. We finished top. We done our job. And now it's almost a second competition of knockout football. So, yeah, we have to be prepared to face a really tough side tomorrow. And, yeah, be ready for anything that comes our way.
So that was the England captain, Harry Kane, on England's progress through the group stage and looking ahead to the start of the knockout phase against Senegal today. They've reached the semi-final and the final in their last two major tournaments. Ollie, it was interesting hearing from Gareth Southgate and Harry Kane yesterday in that news conference. And they sort of alluded to it at a couple of moments, basically sort of highlighting the fact that they feel, and this might be their downfall, they feel tournament savvy. They have that sort of feel of, no, we're quietly in control here. Do you think that that's, you know, like Jack talking about Argentina, you know, maybe doing themselves in with too much pressure. Do you think this is England, maybe some complacency, or do you think this is actually really, really impressive that they're keeping cool and calm? They didn't get carried away with that USA draw and then they kicked on and have done what they needed to do so far.
Well, I mean, I guess the we'll find out tonight. it could go spectacularly wrong. I mean, I think it's a bit of a banana skin kind of game. I think a lot of people are expecting England to just roll Senegal over, and I don't think it's going to be as easy as that at all. I think looking at the way they've spoken and also the way they've performed in the last two tournaments and this one, they do seem tournament savvy. They do seem in control, and they do seem, you know, a lot calmer than perhaps we've seen at previous tournaments. Calmer, but also assured and quietly confident. And I think you know, a lot of that comes from the manager. A lot of it comes from the way they performed in the last two tournaments, and it kind of gives you that measure of or that level of assurance and confidence that, you know, you do feel more in control. I think maybe one of the reasons why Germany, for example, haven't performed as well at this tournament is because the failures at the previous two tournaments. So maybe it becomes a self-perpetuating thing, and maybe you do just feel more in control of yourselves after a couple of good tournaments. It's about breaking a cycle and having that first good tournament, which England had in 2018.
Jack, do you think that they will take great confidence in the fact that they are the top scorers from the group stages? Or do you think that's almost immaterial because they were sort of... I mean, Iran, we were talking about pressure and off-the-field issues dominating players' minds. Iran weren't really at it in that first game that we saw them at it against Wales. And then the game against Wales for England, Wales weren't really up to the standard, were they? So do we read too much into it, or are we not giving them enough credit?
I don't think it especially matters that they were the top scorers. I do think they will be pleased the fact that I don't think anybody had a better record over the group stages than England did. I think that the fact that, you know, good teams didn't make it through the group stages, whether that's Germany or Denmark, that shows that, as Ollie was saying, England have really, I mean, mastered might be too strong a word, but they've got a good handle on how to get through these difficult group stages. You know, Southgate has a lot of experience. He's got a lot of England play with a lot of kind of competence and nous and canniness. And they are just very good at smoothly negotiating these phases, which in the past England teams have struggled with.
One of the big issues, and it's sort of been dominating ever since, well, almost pre-kickoff against Wales. Wow, he's made a big decision. You know, he's switched things around. We were expecting changes to that side, but now it's whether he switches it back and he brings back Sterling and he brings back Saka. What's your gut feeling from what he said yesterday, or is it still up in the air? Jack, let's start with you.
Well, Southgate is keeping his cards very, very close to his chest. You know, normally by now you would expect to have a stronger sense of what the team was going to be. I think a lot of people are still in the dark, even on the morning of the game. I think Southgate doesn't want news to get out about the team. My gut sense is that he will go back to the team, a team similar to what we saw in the first two games. I think Walker will stay. I think Mount will come back in. And then the big question really is in the wide areas. And I think at least one of Sterling or Saka will come back in, but I wonder if Foden might keep his place. I'd bet against Rashford starting at this point, I think.
What do you think, Holly? What do you think he should do?
I don't want to say it's much of a muchness because the, you know, if you talk about Sterling and Saka and Rashford and Foden, they're four very different players. They all bring different things, and but I think in terms, I think they've all made a claim. Judge Sterling and Saka on the first game against Iran, rather than the second game against USA, where everyone really was a bit below par. As I said, because they all bring different things, I think that's what you've got to look at, rather than necessarily which player you think is better, which player you think is more in form. You've got to look at what suits the setup more, whether it's Sterling or Rashford, whether it's Saka or Foden. I was interested to see a couple of reports last night suggesting that Foden was going to start, and we at the time of recording, we don't have that information, but I was slightly surprised by it, because I thought Foden was perhaps starting from a bit of a disadvantage starting from further back in Southgate's estimation for these games. I thought Saka and Sterling both played so well in the first game, and although Foden scored and he had played a part of the first goal with the run that got where he got brought down for the free kick, I don't think he was as involved or as influential in that Wales game as anybody who watches Foden regularly would imagine and hope he would be. I thought he was still quite peripheral for most of the game. His quality is obvious, but I think he's slightly... I don't think he's necessarily as comfortable a fit in this England team as, say, Saka or Sterling is.
Jack, it's an interesting one with this selection issue. I wanted to ask you another question on it, because ultimately, this is the sort of moment that has the potential to test this speak of unity. We're all together. Because these are big decisions. Because quite rightly, Foden or Rashford, if they are sat back on the bench, would think, well, hang on a minute, I thought you, as you highlighted and as he'd highlighted, thought this was about meritocracy. You've gone back to tried and tested. So I'm fascinated to see what happens first and foremost, but then is there the potential for a little bit of unrest? Or do you not think that this is part of the England DNA?
I do think there is a potential for players to be unhappy at not playing. I'm sure that Foden and Rashford would feel upset if, having played so well against Wales, they didn't play against Senegal. I actually think the big flashpoint here is Raheem Sterling.
Yeah.
You know, Raheem Sterling has started basically every big game for England, certainly since the 2018 World Cup. He's one of Southgate's most trusted players. Southgate was very loyal to him during the 2018 World Cup, during the Euros last year. But if he... I think there's quite a big chance that he doesn't play today. And if he doesn't play, that would be a huge change of policy from Southgate to not play Sterling in a big game.
Is that just simply evolution? It just happens.
Maybe it is. You know, Sterling hasn't really played very well in club football for quite a long time. So maybe it is justified. But I'm sure that Sterling would find that very difficult to take. The other factor here is, and I have no idea how much of a factor this is, but it's worth flagging. Do you remember when, after the when England played USA and Sterling was subbed off and Sterling walked straight down the tunnel? So afterwards, Gareth Southgate said that Sterling had to go into... He had doping control after the game, so that's why he had to go off. Now, maybe that's true, but equally, it's not inconceivable that Sterling was not happy at being subbed off. Players usually are not happy at being taken off in big games. And it's also not inconceivable that if he were to have a strop, and I'm just speculating here, that maybe that would be a factor in these thoughts that Southgate was having. So it's really going to be... I think Sterling standing in the squad and with Southgate is one of the biggest topics connected to team selection today.
Something that is not up for question, even though I remember on the live show that we do on social media, I asked Jack about Harry Kane, whether he plays or he doesn't. And I've never seen someone balk quite so visually when I asked him about it. Obviously, there was lots of stuff circulating on social media about, oh, you know, is it time to drop Harry Kane? That's not going to happen. He's the captain. He was speaking, I thought, pretty impressively ahead of the game yesterday. Do you think it does become a sort of a little bit of a worry in his mind that he hasn't scored? Or do you think he's just very cool, calm, comfortable, and if he is contributing, then he's content?
I think the Harry Kane of maybe 4 years ago would have been very fretful if he'd gone into big games and wasn't scoring. I think he's much more comfortable with his role in the team and knows that if he's playing a part in the games, if he's creating chances for others, if he's creating space for others, then he's doing his job. I mean, I think I haven't got alarm bells ringing in my mind about the way he's playing. I think I'm certainly with Jack on how crazy it would be to think of dropping him. But I think it's a situation where, for example, if it gets to an hour or 70 minutes a day and he just isn't in the game and England aren't performing and England needs something different, I think it's perfectly plausible that you could consider taking him off or take him off and put Rashford or Wilson through the middle. I think that, you know, I don't think in these days of five substitutions and tournament football, I don't think he can be considered so untouchable that you persevere with him if he's playing poorly on a given day.
It's not like a Graham Taylor, Gary Lineker moment, is it?
I mean, that felt shocking at the time. I don't think it needs to feel that shocking these days if somebody gets substituted when in a moment of need. But it's I wouldn't drop him at all. I wouldn't, I would definitely start with him. But I think maybe if he is struggling, there has to be a willingness to consider a plan B.
I think Southgate would love to be able to take Kane off with 20 minutes left. That's been something that England have done quite a lot in the last few years, is they have not, they don't want Kane to play 90 minutes every single time in a tournament, because they know, Kane actually talked about this in his press conference yesterday. If you remember back to the 2018 World Cup, Kane started really, really well, and even though he won the Golden Boot, he was actually rubbish in the knockout rounds. Like, he wasn't in the game at all. He looked injured, but he wasn't injured. He was just exhausted physically and mentally. And Kane has spoken very honestly about this. So I think England want to avoid that scenario this time, and that means taking Kane off where possible with 20 or 30 minutes left. So if touch wood, England are winning this evening, then I'm sure that Kane will get the hook on 65, 70 minutes just to make sure he doesn't deplete his energy too much ahead of the next game.
We shall see. And look out, obviously, for the team news on The Athletic. We'll be following it all the way up to kickoff and then the reaction as well. But it's not all about England, however much we would like to think it is. Senegal are standing in their way. And I caught up with Senegalese journalist Mahmoud Gaye for the lowdown on England's opponents.
I think that all Senegalese players are excited because Senegalese team in the history of World Cup like to play against big teams. In the 2002, we are beat the French team who win the World Cup.
Got two striding up in the centre here. Bouba Diop is there! Oh, and Bouba Diop is there! And Senegal has scored the first goal of the 2002 World Cup!
I think that the Senegal teams, the players, the fans and the country are not afraid of England, because with the Afghan winner, they have a great confidence, and now they think that we can beat every team.
Sadio Mane with a chance for history for Senegal.
Confidence is growing in this last game. In the first game we play against Netherlands without Sadio Mane. It's the first time that Senegal team play without him. I think that it's normal that the coach try to find a solution to play without him. And in this first game we play without Mane, and it will be difficult for us. Now after the second game, we play a great game, and the last game against Ecuador, we are very progress in the style of game and the impact. And Ismaïla Sarr shows that he can be a leader of this team.
Call as you like. Ismaïla Sarr rolls Senegal into the lead.
Since he came to the national team, he do a great thing every time. But Senegalese people think that Ismaïla can do more. But this time, without Sadio Mane, he have to do that. And I think that he shows that in the last game against Ecuador. In this World Cup, they have shown that every team can play against other teams. They don't fear big teams. Why Senegal can't beat England? It's possible.
So it's great speaking to Mahmoud yesterday, who still has that great air of confidence of a man who has watched his team win a major tournament. They won AFCON, lifted the trophy in February. It was Sadio Mane who captained, scored the vital goal. But obviously he's not here. Also, Idrissa Gueye, which is a real punch in the guts for them. He's suspended as well ahead of this game. So, you know, how are we seeing them as a proposition?
Yeah, that must be a nice feeling, wasn't it? It must be a nice feeling for the media and the fans as well. But it's you know, if you go back to was it January with the AFCON and the game against Egypt, the final against Egypt, and then the same against Egypt in the playoff to reach the World Cup, and they were two absolutely sort of grueling, nail biting, excruciating games, which and they held their nerve on both occasions. I mean, that we talk about big game mentality. That is it, you know, holding a nerve in those penalty shootouts, which England famously aren't very good at. We haven't really talked about the possibility of penalties and how, you know, whether the English neurosis has returned after the Euros. Could well go to penalties, couldn't it? It's
well, if it does, Senegal have got someone who I obviously follow very closely, covering Watford for The Athletic, Ismaïla Sarr, who scored such a swaggery penalty with that no-look finish. I was so impressed that he would do that on the world stage. It does show that if it does come down to a pressure moment, he's certainly up for the challenge.
One thing England have been doing is preparing for penalties with a skills net, which is basically a net with no post or bar and no goalkeeper. So it's all about being able to hit your corner of the net as well as possible. But yeah, it's been a big topic of conversation in press conferences this week. Almost every day, England players get asked about how are you preparing for penalties? How do you avoid, you know, what happened last time? And Southgate's had to say, look, you know, we actually had quite a good record of penalties before the final of the Euros. We, you know, both in the Nations League in 2019 against Colombia in 2018. So I don't think it's something that England will be too worried about.
You know what we've done there, gents? We've made it all about England again.
Yeah, sorry.
I want to talk about Senegal. And I want to talk about their potential and the challenge that stands in front of England. Yes, there is no Sadio Mane. We've mentioned that. There is also, which is potentially for the confidence that they were building through this tournament from being competitive against the Netherlands, although they lost late, got back on track with a regulation win against Qatar, and then a really confidence-boosting win against Ecuador. The fact that they've lost Idrissa Gueye from their midfield engine room, that's got the potential to be actually quite significantly disruptive for them. Do you not think?
Yeah, he's a really, really good player. Southgate was very positive about Senegal yesterday. He said, you know, just because there's no Mane, it's not going to be any easier for us. He talks a lot about how much he's seen of Senegal and the great spirit and unity that they have in their side, and also the fantastic individual players. You know, people will be very familiar with Mendy, Koulibaly, Sarr, all of whom are fantastic players, have had really, really good World Cups so far. And I guess it's just possible that if, you know, we know that Mendy on a good day is basically unbeatable. Like we've seen him do this in the past for Chelsea. If Mendy's at his best tonight, it's going to be very, really, really difficult for England to get past him.
Very much looking forward to being at the game. We will, of course, react off the back of it, and you'll get all the insight, the analysis, the reaction on The Athletic. Ollie, thank you very much. Jack, thank you to you. What do you do on a match day before a game? Is it very much like preparing your mind for it?
Yeah, mate, I guess I gotta prepare.
Simply say I'm just going for a walk around.
I've got to think about what I guess I'm going to think what I'm going to write if they win and what I'm going to write if they lose.
Yeah.
And then maybe have a nap.
Good, a power nap and a pre-match meal, chicken and rice and all that sort of
chicken
stuff.
Chicken and rice, lots of carbs, and protein. Yeah. Yes,
really absolutely. Build up, excellent. Okay, yeah, get all the info you need on The Athletic. If you want to subscribe, head to theathletic.com/footballpod. You can pick up the latest deal, which is £2, $2 a month for 12 months. There is also news on other things apart from England. We are covering the World Cup in a fulsome way. News on Brazil, potential of Neymar getting back for their round of 16 tie against South Korea. Felipe Cardenas has also written about Uruguay's eruption of emotion at the end of their group stage elimination at the hands of South Korea. And there is much more as well. But that is it for today. We will catch you tomorrow when England might be through, or they might be out of the World Cup. We shall see.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.